There are three stages of feeling for God, as Patanjali puts it. The mild, the middling, and the intense. And it is only the intense feeling for God that finally succeeds, not the middling or the mild. A mild feeling for God, almost every religious person has. And this feeling accepts the existence of God as the supreme reality. But it also accepts the reality of the world and of people around. When an equal reality is accorded to the world and to human society and to things in general, as much as to God, that love for God becomes very mild. Because a fraction of the mind believes in the existence of God and feels that it is proper to love God. But another fraction goes to the world, which feels also that it is proper to love the world. And there is something valuable in the world. There is also a fraction working for the values that are human, personal, social, etc. So like a stream of water which is moving in different directions by channelization of its content, the mind channelizes itself into various streams of movement. One stream alone touching the concept or feeling of God, the other streams going somewhere else. So this means the whole of the personality is not feeling for God, though some part of it feels for God. We have given 1/3 of the mind to God, sometimes even less than that. But this will not succeed, says the discipline of yoga. Sometimes we have different kinds of experience in the world which awakens us into a different kind of feeling altogether. That things are not what they appear to be. There seems to be something peculiar about things, different from what they are taken to be by us in our daily activities. Though it looks that the world is all right and people are all right, but they seem to be all right only for some time and not for all times. This fact enters our mind rarely, occasionally, on certain conditions of experience. Either when we are frustrated, defeated, or done a bad turn, as we call it, which makes us feel a kind of resentment towards everything which we originally felt to be worthwhile. we may resent even a friend whom we regarded as an alter ego up to this time. This resentment, which must come to the mind of everyone one day or the other, will shake up the feelings that one has for the world and to people, and then it is that those feelings which were externally diverted will withdraw themselves and prepare themselves for a different movement altogether. Then the stuff of feeling gets intensified. This is a very strange state of affairs in our mind, namely that the feelings can hibernate like frogs sitting inside a hole, not doing anything, of course, not coming out, and not active inside also. When we are frustrated, defeated in our purposes, disillusioned about things in the world, the feelings for the world withdraw themselves. You cannot love the world afterwards, because it has given you a kick. Then what happens to those feelings which you are regarding the world as so much of value, great value? These feelings come back to their source, as if the waters of a current are pushed back to the main current of the river. This pushing back of the force of the main current, which was channelizing itself in different directions, only increases the potentiality within, but it does not move in the required direction. Here, the feelings get intensified, no doubt. They become more powerful than they were earlier, and they seek for an expression. But they must find an outlet. Not finding an outlet, they struggle inside and begin to search for an outlet. In this condition, your feeling for something that is not visible, though one may not be quite clear as to what it is, becomes strong. And if the pressure which has brought the feeling back to its source continues for a long time, it can break its barriers and perhaps move in the direction of God. How love of God arises in the mind is difficult to explain. It has hundreds and hundreds of ways. not even the great philosophers can explain satisfactorily how love of God arises in the mind of a person. Sometimes these divine feelings arise by silly occurrences in life, apparently silly and meaningless. A word that is uttered against your will or wish is sufficient to turn you away from everything in the world. Though it may look so small an affair, but that is the last straw on the camel's back. It was all that was needed. A camel can bear a lot of load. Its back will not break easily. But when it has been loaded to the maximum, they say even a straw kept over it will break its back. How can a straw break the back of a camel? But that was the last thing. That is why it breaks. So even a small thing that occurs, even the tiniest event in the world, one word that is told, can put you out completely. Because that was the last thing that you expected and it has come. And you were prepared for it inwardly, though consciously you were not prepared for it, because nobody is prepared for unhappy things in the world. Even frustrations sometimes can drive people to God, though that is not the normal way, but that is not quite impossible. Loss, bereavement, destruction, and a sense of hopelessness in regard to everything may drive a person to God. And when God calls you, He will bring about such a catastrophic situation. It is not that He will call you very smilingly always, in a wrathful mood. He can crush you down and then force you back to Himself. That is one of the ways in which God works. Many a time we need only such methods of turning back. A word of good advice will not be listened to by us. My dear friend, what is there in this world? You must meditate on God, love God, and meditate on God throughout the day. This is a good advice, but who will listen to it? This is a stupid thing, this man is chattering. We have heard this so many times. Then the rod comes. You will not listen to this advice? The rod of God comes and then gives such a blow that it breaks down everything that is worthwhile in this world. Everything goes. Father, mother, brother, sister, husband, wife, whatever it is. He doesn't care for what you hug as dear for you. The wrath of God can come like a flood of the Atlantic, which devastates and everything if it comes. And He doesn't care what your feelings are. He'll get a hoot for your feelings. But very rarely does God take such action. If anyone can give a long rope, it is God who can give it, and perhaps He gives the longest rope. Sama, Dana, Bheda, Danda, they say, are the four methods of action. Action in every field of life. A very polite and sweet and gentle advice which is perfectly positive in nature, is given first. This is what the world does to us, good people do to us, God does to us. This is the proper thing for you. Say people, says the world, and so does God advise. If your mind is not prepared to listen to this advice, which is wholly positive and constructive, like the advice given in the Vedas and the Upanishads or the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, which is wholly constructive, positive and complete. There are what are known as Arthavadas, or eologic statements of scriptures, which say, if you go to God, you will get everything. So there is a temptation also behind it. All the wonders, all the beauties, all the joys, all the powers, omnipotence, etc., will be at your beck and call if you go to God. You will not lose anything, you will gain everything. So why do you cling to these things of the earth, when more things are there ready to receive you with open arms? This is dana, temptation. You are told something wonderful is coming, so don't go to this. If you don't listen to this, the eyes of nature's anger open themselves. You will not listen to me? Do you know what I can do for you? A threat comes occasionally. Nothing happens, of course, but a warning is given. If you don't learn by good advice, you will learn by pain. This is only a word of warning that is conveyed. But man is made of such stuff that nothing will work. Even warning he cares not. Oh, this is going on, this warning has come so many times. Then when everything fails, danda. Danda is punishment. God punishes by bringing about a total revolution of conditions, which can mean anything. And you do not know what sort of revolution he will bring about. It can be personal, physical, psychological, social, political, anything. It can be even earthquake. Even that he can do. Or a thunderstorm, or a flood, cataclysm, whatever it is. Then the mind turns to God, merely because of pressure forcefully exerted from every corner. And if you read the lives of saints, whether of the East or of the West, you will learn how people's minds turn to God. Anything and everything can be a cause of the mind turning to God. Even a cat, even a rat, can be a cause. A wisp of wind, a mildest stroke of misfortune, can turn you to God. But the point of all these illustrations is that yoga requires a whole-souled direction of the mind to God. Tivra samveganam asana, says the Sutra of Patanjali. Realization of God becomes possible only when the feeling for God becomes most intense. If it is mild or middling, it won't be a success. Now, what do you mean by intense feeling for God? What does it mean? Can you give an idea about it? Have we at any time felt an intense feeling for God? The word tivra or intense has a special meaning. It also means almost the same thing as the word ananya, signifies in the Kathopanishad or the Bhagavad Gita. Ananya prokte gatirattar nasti, says the Kathopanishad. Ananya ashtintayanto maam yajana paryubhasate, says the Bhagavad Gita. Ananya means one who is not devoted to another. That is ananya. This is supposed to be the most purified form of divine devotion. Devotion is divine love. And love becomes intense when it has only one object before it. If it has two objects, the love cannot be called intense. Has our feeling only one object before it, or has it more than one object? If it has two objects, or three objects, then the love or feeling is mild. If it has hundreds and thousands of objects, it is very poor indeed. It cannot get even a pass mark. But if it has only one object, it is supposed to be intense. It can apply even to earthly love. If the object is only single, it may be money, for example, for a miser or a greedy billionaire, money making is an object. And whole day and night he will be thinking only of means of acquiring more and more of wealth. There are others who work for name, fame, etc. Status in society, power, authority and so on. If this is the only aim that is before the mind and it cannot think anything else, it does not want even to take lunch, no breakfast, no sleep, I will work only for this, then it is whole-souled feeling for an object. Why should you sleep and why should you have breakfast, lunch, when the mind is after something else? You will not feel hunger at that time. It is not that you are starving or fasting. The feeling of hunger itself is absent. You don't need anything at that time because you are filled with something else. And though it is possible to conceive a singleness of purpose in earthly loves or worldly affections, it is not possible to conceive what it means spiritually. because these things are not known to us and we have not seen them. We cannot therefore even imagine them. We have seen earthly objects, and so we can understand what it means to have whole-souled love for one object only. But what does it mean to have whole-souled love for God? This is difficult for the mind to conceive. It becomes difficult for a simple reason that God is not an object. He is not an object in the sense that he is not outside you. And therefore you cannot love him in the ordinary sense of earthly affection, etc. Even in bhakti scriptures, treatises dealing in divine love, they speak of apara bhakti and para bhakti. Or, as they say, Gauna Bhakti and Ragatmika Bhakti, etc. Gauna Bhakti or Apara Bhakti means devotion or love that requires accessories, instruments. You require some apparatus to stir your affection or love. If the apparatus or instrument is absent, it won't work. Like musicians, for example, there are some musicians who cannot sing unless there is an instrument. They want an harmonium or a violin or a veena or something, because they themselves cannot sing without it, otherwise it is not beautiful. But an exuberance can take possession of oneself, and then you start singing even without an instrument. You will dance even without a tune accompanying it. And devotees speak of ragatmika bhakti or para bhakti as the real form of devotion or love, which does not require any accompaniment. It does not care even for moral and ethical codes of society. It breaks all boundaries of human convention. It has not even a shame to tell you the truth. You may call it shameless if you like. Such is whole-souled love. A person becomes shameless, then the love becomes whole-souled, whether it is in the world or in the realm of spirit. They act in the same way. This is the taste for the object, inundating the personality wholly. Raga means a taste, a tinging of the whole personality with the character of the object which is loved. You assume the characteristics of the object. You become the object that you love. You go on thinking about it and you become that. You forget that you are so and so. You are the very same thing that you are wanting. This is ragatmika bhakti. This happened to the gopis. We read the Rasapanchadhyayi of the Srimad Bhagavata in the 10th skanda, you will learn what it was. They were not gopis or persons. They were Krishnas themselves. The object of their love was they themselves. The distinction between the lover and the loved is abolished in ragatmika bhakti or para bhakti, in whole-souled love. One gopi started killing putana, another gopi started destroying Vrikasura. A third gopi started playing the flute, and so on and so forth, as if they themselves were Krishnas. You become that which you love. This is the highest form of love. There is no love there, as a matter of fact, because in ordinary language, love means the movement of your emotions towards something outside. When you yourself have become that object, where is the movement of your affection? You have gone mad, that's all. And all great devotees are mad people, God intoxicated. And you become mad. When you are possessed by a single feeling, whether it is temporal or spiritual, now such a kind of tivrata or intensity of devotion, ardor for the practice of yoga or the realization of God seems to be called for. How many of us are fit for it? It is difficult to imagine. And little thought bestowed upon this subject will also reveal why we are not getting anything in spite of our crying for days and months and years. We are deceived, unfortunately. Though we cannot know the causes of this deception adequately, it goes without saying there is a sort of deception in which we seem to be entangled. And this deception comes into play when the object of our quest is kept out of sight by the presentation of something else which is made to appear equally good or even better. This is what happens to most of us, and this is what has happened to everyone. The object of our quest has been kept out of sight completely. It is not in front of us. And not merely that, we will not be allowed even to think that it is kept out of sight. We will be brainwashed thoroughly, so that everything looks all right. You will go on muttering the same formula that has been given to you by the world. And you will do this till the body drops. So two catastrophes can befall us as spiritual seekers, that we can forget our aims. That is bad enough. But something worse can happen, that we can remember something contrary to it and take it as our objective. No wonder that no one can practice yoga. No one can love God. But the yoga shastras insist upon this requisite. Tivra samveganam asanna. And the effort of the mind cannot bring about this kind of intensity. We are always placed in a state of pondering whenever we think about this matter. The whole-souled love of God cannot come by human effort. Human effort is inadequate for the purpose, because it would be something like attempting to carry burning coals with a piece of straw. You can't carry it. Even a great master like Acharya Shankara did not answer this question properly when he himself raised this point in one of his passages in the Brahma Sutras commentary. How does knowledge rise in the jiva? Not by human effort, because the effort towards knowledge is possible only when there is knowledge. And you are asking the question, how does knowledge arise? How can love of God arise in the person? It cannot rise by effort, because who can have the energy to put forth such effort as to invoke the power of God, which can rouse such a feeling for God? So, the great Advaitin Shankara himself says, apparently contrary to his doctrine himself itself, he may say that it is Ishwaranugraha. Ishwaranugraha Deva Pumsam Advaita Vasana, says Dattatreya in his Avadhuta Gita. Very difficult to understand what all this means. The feeling for the unity of things arises due to the grace of God. This is what the Avadhuta Gita tells us. Ishwaranugraha Deva, only by that, no other way. So, while from one side it looks that hard effort is necessary, on the other side it appears that we have to be passively receptive to the ingress of divine grace, always awaiting the call. And yearning for that light and blessing which can come upon us at any time. Whatever be the means by which such a love of God can rise in ourselves, this is an indispensable, and there is no other alternative. Nanya pantha vidyate ayanaya, no other alternative for you. No other path can be seen. There is no way out. This is a must for each and every person. And when that intensity of feeling arises, miraculous experiences automatically follow, which is the glorious consummation of yoga.